It is good to be back with you again. I've been gone for a couple weeks. It makes me think of what we miss when we're gone. One of the things I appreciate about this fellowship is the way that people like Carolyn and many of you call us to justice, to things that may not be always on each of our hearts and minds, and I appreciate that about this congregation. It's not maybe a personal strength of mine, and so I need you to bring that out in me, so thank you. But it is good to be home. Many of us are traveling this time of year, and so I am curious, what do you miss when you're gone, when you're away from New Covenant? We were traveling and actually driving both days, both Sundays, so we weren't at other churches. And even when we are at other churches, there is nothing like New Covenant. I enjoyed listening to Valerie's teaching and Jeff Trask's teaching from last week and the ways that they called out different things, but it is good to be home. So I want to hear from you. What do you miss from New Covenant when you're traveling? I see some of you who've been gone. You can shout it out. Yes, familiar faces. One of the things I learned from listening to Jeff's teaching is that we have to repeat it back into the mic or whoever's listening in the car won't know what people said. What else?
Openness to progressive ideas.
Openness to progressive ideas, we pray. The music. The music is really... I was glad to hear that Jill got to experience some of that when she was in Guatemala, because for many of us, the music, there's nothing like what we have here at New Covenant. What else? We have a pretty relaxed vibe here, don't we? Warm greeting. When I'm gone, I get to listen to the teaching online, which I would encourage you to do if you miss Jeff Trask's or Valerie's, to listen to them. But we don't have the worship, and maybe someday we'll have a sampling of that that we can hear. But that's something, there's nothing like being together in praise, raising our voices and raising our hands. Which brings us to the text for today, which is by one of the great worshipers of the Bible himself, King David, and a celebration that Israel was having. So if Lori would go ahead and read for us, please.
Once again, David assembled the select warriors of Israel, 30,000 strong. David and all the troops who were with him set out for Bala, which is Kiriath-Jearim of Judah, to bring God's chest up from there, the chest that is called by the name of the Lord of Heavenly Forces, who sits enthroned on the winged creatures. Meanwhile, David and the entire house of Israel celebrated in the Lord's presence with all their strength, with songs, zithers, harps, tambourines, rattles, and cymbals. David, dressed in a linen priestly vest, danced with all his strength before the Lord. This is how David and the entire house of Israel brought up the Lord's chest with shouts and trumpet blasts.
I love the idea of warriors assembling not for battle, but for worship. That we take the best of who we are, the best of all of our strength, and pour that into worship instead of war. Acts of unity and devotion and giving God our best. I like this translation's emphasis on strength. That is, with all our strength that we praise the Lord. And reminding us of that passage in Nehemiah where it says that the joy of the Lord is our strength and is not in weapons or warriors. We'll see the same sharing of food later on in this passage today, this idea that there's food and fellowship and joy together. And I sometimes wonder if this were to become our reputation or Christians' reputation, this idea that they are so joyful, that they have so much fun. I'm not sure that's Christian's reputation, that we are the ones having a lot of fun, and that's what gives us the strength. But what I want to focus on today is the corporate nature of worship, the importance of coming together. The celebrations in 2 Samuel and Nehemiah are both community celebrations. And while we can sing to God alone or compose songs and poems, as many of you do in our solitary time with God, as David did, praise and worship are not primarily individual. They are our personal connections with God come into our community praise and worship. The emphasis here is on all the troops, the entire house of Israel, all joined together in the Lord's presence. And as we think about joining together in worship, I think about both expanding the community and also the sadness we feel when people are missing from our community, both sides of that, whether they don't feel welcome in a church atmosphere or they're traveling or whatever it is, we miss people when they're not here. I think of that particularly in the summer when many of us travel, but also in the winter when some of you go to warmer places to get vitamin D while other of us are stuck here in the cold and the ice of Illinois. And when you come back, the joy of having you return is palpable. And I also feel it on a group level. When it is just us, when there are other groups that are missing from us, it's not as complete. I think that was part of the joy of Good Friday, that we joined with Restoration Urban Ministries and with Jean-René Balakita's band, and so many of us were together in worship, and the things that maybe separate us in our everyday lives sort of faded away in the context of worship. And for those of you who missed Good Friday, we are scheduling, hopefully Jean-René is going to come back the Sunday of Labor Day weekend. We'll get that on the calendar because it was wonderful to be led in worship by another element of our community. And the flip side is that we are also sad when people are missing, when over the course of the 40 years of our fellowship, people come, people go. It's great to have some familiar faces back in town. Alice, it's good to see you. Don Shea's here today. To have people who have been missing from us, to have them back together. I think that was part of the joy of the Jim Krogert concert, knowing so many people in our community that worship in other places now, we were back together again. Yesterday, the celebration of Jamie Cridenier's life, who many of us knew and loved and were at her service yesterday, was that sort of bittersweet reunion of worship, reminding us that we are part of the same body, spread out, old friends and new additions, observing the rhythm of our human journey together, acknowledging our hope in life eternal and the resurrection that awaits us, that these separations will be no more. When I think of the corporate nature of worship, I am also reminded of our ongoing need for interpersonal reconciliation. When individuals stay away from the church because they don't feel welcome or valued, or because they're in conflict with another member of our body, we all suffer. And dealing with conflict in healthy ways is a significant challenge in our society, in our church, in our families, in our world. And we don't escape that challenge at New Covenant. It's part of us as well, part of our brokenness, part of our hope for redemption. And perhaps because we emphasize fellowship so much that when our relationships with each other are broken, it's painful. It continues to be an area in which we are called as a fellowship to grow and mature and learn how to address these interpersonal things that come up between us because we are different. That is part of the beauty of this fellowship and also part of the challenge is that we come from so many different places and we need new skills and strategies for learning how to love and to meet each other where we're at. Today's passage also, David and Israel are impacted by some interpersonal difficulties, issues of status and reputation and the complications of corporate worship and individual identity. So Lori, if you'd read again.
As the Lord's chest entered David's city, Saul's daughter, Michal, was watching from a window. She saw King David jumping and dancing before the Lord, and she lost all respect for him. David went home to bless his household, but Saul's daughter, Michal, came out to meet him. "How did Israel's king honor himself today?" she said. "By exposing himself in plain view of the female servants of his subjects, like any indecent person would." David replied to Michal, "I was celebrating before the Lord, who chose me over your father and his entire family, and who appointed me leader over the Lord's people, over Israel. And I will celebrate before the Lord again. I may humiliate myself even more, and I may be humbled in my own eyes, but I will be honored by the female servants you are talking about." Michal, Saul's daughter, had no children to the day she died.
There are a range of reactions and conclusions we could draw from this passage. Perhaps for some of us it's easy to leap to judgment of Michal, to conclude that she sort of got what was coming to her, or to preach this as a warning or a cautionary tale. I think some of us are shocked, actually, at what seems like a pretty harsh outcome. But as I was thinking about this passage, I wondered instead, what is it like to be sad for Michal? To mourn for her isolation and her loss? Why was she not included in with all Israel in the celebration? Did she not feel welcome or chosen? Perhaps overlooked by David? Did he assemble all the troops but neglect to invite his wives, thinking that the invitation was obvious, forgetting that some of us need to be invited, to be reminded that someone cares if we are there or not. Maybe Michal didn't know how to freely enter into worship, wasn't sure how to participate. As Saul's daughter, perhaps her loyalties were divided, or she felt constrained by the role that society prescribed for her. She's a woman caught between her father and her husband, a former king's daughter, a wife of his adversary and replacement. But whatever the reasons for her lack of participation, that separation didn't end well. Being outside the worship experience drove a rift between her and David and between her and the Lord. Being separated from corporate worship is not healthy for the individual or for the body. It impairs our ability to experience and recognize the Spirit. We stand on the outside judging participants, their sincerity, their appropriateness, thinking we have the impartial assessment of what it all means. But when we are outside, instead of becoming astute observers, we often misunderstand what is happening inside. We miss out on the blessing of the Holy Spirit. Our lack of involvement, not being caught up in the Spirit, instead causes us to fall back on our worldly sense of judgment. Perhaps our embarrassment for being associated with these weird people, wanting to be different from them and set apart. Michal was concerned with respect and honor, and I think if most of us are honest, we also are a little bit concerned with how we look to other people. We don't want to make fools of ourselves. We want respect and dignity, and we don't want the people closest to us, especially maybe our spouses, to do things that embarrass us. So perhaps the question to consider is, how might we be more free to be caught up in the Spirit? Or what embarrassment might we need to examine about being associated with other members of this body? Our desire for them to be more appropriate that might interfere with our own worship. As I was considering this passage, I was also identifying with that desire to stay home rather than participate in the collective. I thought about all the times that it's hard for me to join in, the barriers that we experience to being in fellowship. Somehow, even as a pastor's kid, I didn't go to funerals growing up. We didn't really seem to have them. All four of my grandparents lived to see me married to Jubal, and only one of them had a funeral, which was on the day Josiah was born, so I wasn't at that one either. And it's only just recently that I've come to understand how important those community gatherings to grieve and to celebrate someone's passing is, and to realize that my participation in that part of our life together matters. And when I think about weddings and fellowship meals and conferences and retreats, we all have reasons that sometimes we want to stay home and not participate. And sometimes that is the right choice. With God, there is no hard and fast rules. Sometimes we need to stay home. But I also know that for me, there are other times when the right choice is to participate, but I still don't want to. And sometimes I go, and I'm glad when I do, when I follow that nudge, and sometimes I don't. And when I don't go, when I don't participate, I don't know what the blessings are that I've missed out on. And that's how I hear Michael's story, with sadness that there are blessings that she missed out on. And knowing that sometimes I too miss out on blessings because for various reasons I've held back and I've chosen to stay home rather than to enter into fellowship and worship. If you know this story, there are actually two rather disturbing parts, this part about Michael, but another part that the lectionary leaves out, and I was going to leave out too, honestly, because it didn't seem to fit. Michael's interaction with David and the lack of children is disturbing, but there's a prior incident that is also was disturbing to David, and I think I understand why they left it out, but sometimes we need to address that as well. So if Lori would read that for us.
They loaded God's chest on a new cart and carried it from Abinadab's house, which was on the hill. Uzzah and Ahio, Abinadab's sons, were driving the new cart. Uzzah was beside God's chest while Ahio was walking in front of it. Meanwhile, David and the entire house of Israel celebrated in the Lord's presence with all their strength, with songs, zithers, harps, tambourines, rattles, and cymbals. When they approached Nacon's threshing floor, Uzzah reached out to God's chest and grabbed it because the oxen had stumbled. The Lord became angry at Uzzah, and God struck him there because of his mistake, and he died there next to God's chest. Then David got angry because the Lord's anger lashed out against Uzzah, and so that place is called Perez Uzzah today. David was frightened by the Lord that day. "How will I ever bring the Lord's chest to me?" he asked. So David didn't take the chest away with him to David's city. Instead, he had it put in the house of Obed-Edom, who was from Gath. The Lord's chest stayed with Obed-Edom's household in Gath for 3 months, and the Lord blessed Obed-Edom's household and all that he had.
Kind of a disturbing passage, angering and frightening and I think confusing to David as well. The Hebrew is uncertain about the cause for the Lord's anger that resulted in Uzzah's death. Perhaps it was for irreverence, that's what the New American Standard says. Perhaps it was because they should have been carrying the ark and instead they put it in a cart. There are various theories and sermons and lessons taught about why this happened and what we should learn from it, and I'm sure there's plenty of rabbinic commentary where people arguing various reasons of this happening. I'm not going to give you an official interpretation of this story, but when I was thinking about leaving it out, I heard something different in this story this time around. And as sometimes happens, I actually was not clear. Was this a message just for me, or is this something that I'm supposed to share with you all? So if you find it meaningful, take it with you. If you find it not meaningful, don't worry about it. We'll just go back to whatever we were talking about before. Just because the ark is tipping doesn't mean it is my personal job to fix it. And in fact, to think that I alone can right the situation, that it depends on me to set things straight, is a mistake. It is not my hand that will save the house of the Lord from crashing to the ground. I can't control the progression of the Lord's word any more than Uzzah could. It is not to my credit if it is stabilized and set aright. If the church stumbles, perhaps because we are going about things wrong or because we are imperfect oxen or the plan for moving things forward wasn't well thought out, or we somehow missed the directions because they were buried in a scroll somewhere, it's up to God to set us right. It's God's house. It's the Lord's place of presence. And if we are going to move forward without tumbling to the ground, it will be because the Lord is guiding us by God's hand, not by mine, not by Uzzah's, or any other one person's. So that might be beside the main point of worship being corporate, or it might be the only thing interesting that you'll hear in this teaching, but I felt like I was supposed to include it, so if it's meaningful, take it. But perhaps it is a reminder that no one, not the pastor or any one of us, can single-handedly fix or right the cart, even if we are worried that it is listing dangerously to the side. I too, you too, must be one of the worshipers, like David was. Rather than imagining that getting the Lord's house from point A to point B depends on my plan and my hand keeping it straight. So, back to our focus on community celebration. The last point about corporate worship is that it is marked by blessing, sharing, generosity, and food. Cake, to be specific, and other goodies that remind me of the bakers among us.
The Lord's chest was brought in and put in its place inside the tent that David had pitched for it. Then David offered entirely burned offerings in the Lord's presence, in addition to well-being sacrifices. When David finished offering the entirely burned offerings and the well-being sacrifices, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord of heavenly forces. He distributed food among all the people of Israel, to the whole crowd, male and female, each receiving a loaf of bread, a date cake, and a raisin cake. Then all the people went back to their homes.
Worship is communal. It is generous and sacrificial and should be modeled by our leaders. Those who are rich in blessings are blessed to share them. There's a time to come together, to celebrate, to sacrifice, to worship, and to eat. And then a time for each of us to return to our homes, to digest all that has happened, to take the blessing back to our everyday lives. To me, this is what New Covenant retreats are about, coming together in worship and celebration to eat and bless each other as part of our journey together. A special time set aside that creates memories and stories to tell each other when we return to our own homes. I will be honest and say there have been times that I just want to stay home and don't want to go to retreats for whatever reasons Michael had, for the various fears and issues that we might have to not participate. And sometimes I have missed out on a blessing that could have been mine if I had joined in. And so I would encourage all of us to come to the retreat because who knows what blessing might be in store for you. At New Covenant, I think we think of ourselves as being good at worship. I think it's one of our specialties. It's important to us. That's what we spend the majority of our time doing on Sunday mornings. And sometimes it's important to think explicitly about it, what we often take for granted. What does the picture of corporate worship say to us? What are the things that might cause us personally to hold back from participating fully? How might we be able to create more opportunities for unifying worship experiences? What ways of relational healing might the Lord be calling us to so that we can expand the circle of fellowship, so that everyone feels invited and welcome? And what risks might we need to take in order to more fully experience the blessings of fellowship and worship together? So I would encourage you to open yourself to these questions and whatever the Lord might be nudging in your heart and mind at the communion tables today. Communion is part of our worship together, a taste of the feast to come, where each one of us is invited. It is the Lord's house and the Lord's table. And may the Lord bring us more fully into being a community of worship.